Now move to the eighth case, War Marion versus Columbia Correctional, 072556. And for the appellant, Mr. Doyle.
I am Thomas Doyle, and I represent War Marion. Mr. Marion received 8 months of disciplinary segregation. The district court dismissed his due process claim, finding that disciplinary segregation does not trigger due process protections under Sandin. On May 1st, 2008, this court entered an order asking for briefing on the question of whether Marion's 240-day segregation is atypically harsh because of its length alone, under the standards for liberty interests set forth in Wilkinson and Sandin. The short answer to that question is yes. 8 months is long enough, and it can implicate a liberty interest because it can be an atypical and significant hardship on the inmate in relation to the ordinary incidents of prison life. The one piece that should be added to that in the more precise answer is, yes, it can be long enough, but the issue should not be decided on the pleadings alone. In this case, the issue was decided solely on the basis of Mr. Marion's pro se complaint, as the district court was pre-screening this complaint under Section 1915A, as she was required to do. In the course of that pre-screening, she applied an overstated test of Sandin and dismissed his claim. The fact is, under Sandin, that whether a particular disciplinary measure imposes an atypical and significant hardship on the inmate in relation to the ordinary incidents of prison life is, of course, a fact question. Along the way, there are many of those features that trigger fact inquiries. Is it atypical? Meaning, how often does it happen? Is it significant? How serious is it? According to the ordinary incidents of prison life, what is ordinary? All of those things, Your Honor.
Would it depend what the conditions were during those 200?
Very much so, Your Honor. Very much so. And that is the kind of fact inquiry that the length of time...
So we're calling Sandin. The court thought that was important.
Correct. And in Sandin, it was 30 days. And the court said the conditions were not dramatically different enough so that 30 days triggered a liberty interest. Consider, for example, this court's opinion in Bryan, where the court discusses how conditions that may not be serious enough for a short period of time can be for a year if they last for a year. And in Bryan, what this court did was sent the case back for further fact-finding, because the early dismissal on the preliminary paper record in that case did not give this court enough information in order to make...
I know this is a pro se kind of a situation.
That's correct.
But does your client make any allegations outside of duration? Does he tell us anything at all about how he was treated, his diet, et cetera?
It's not in the record, Your Honor.
I see.
I know those things. I could tell you what they would be on remand, but those items are not in the record.
We've got to take the procedural posture. We have the case.
That's correct, Your Honor.
In fact, that's your basic point.
That's right. And on remand, he could put in detailed evidence of how the differences in conditions were an especially severe hardship on him.
Is there something in this case about him moving from DS-2 to DS-1?
There is, Your Honor. I can explain.
Please explain that. And was there any hint of that in the complaint that he filed?
I don't believe that is in the complaint. At this particular facility in Wisconsin, at Columbia Correctional Institution, there are levels of discipline that someone can have. Mr. Marion was in DS-2. I believe the 2 means 2 people per cell. And he was in disciplinary segregation, which meant he had more restricted visitation hours than he would have in the general population. And it meant that he had different... I believe the size of the cell was different in DS-2. While he was in DS-2 is when the events that we are discussing here today occurred, the argument with his cellmate. And from that, he was then put in DS-1. And DS-1 is one cell, one person per cell. Again, Your Honor, this is not all laid out in the record, what the difference is between DS2 and DS1 and how all of that compares to the general prison population.
Is there any connection with the length of the segregated portion of the sentence that someone's serving as to whether they're in DS1 or DS2?
I don't believe so. I don't know how you land in one versus the other, and I don't know whether it is step discipline, for example, whether you go first to one and then to another. I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
The record doesn't say so.
The record doesn't say that, Your Honor. The fact is that the difficulty of this record meant that it should have gotten more attention. Now, I'm not suggesting that every single one of these prisoner cases ought to get more attention. The district courts get a flood of prisoner cases, and dealing with them is an enormous issue. I was amazed in the course of preparing for this appeal when I read the Supreme Court's opinion in Jones v. Buck. And in that one, the court talks about how as many as 25% of all civil filings might be inmate cases.
The district that I came
at the district
from,
court level,
it was over a third.
Over a third. And the pre-screening is not only required by statute, it's part of what district courts have to do to stay on top of the tide of the paper. So the question is, when does one deserve more attention? What's a useful rule of law for district court judges facing this mountain of paper? The rule of law we would suggest is, and this is entirely consistent with the earlier opinions in this case, is at the pre-screening stage, in a case that involves disciplinary segregation but does not involve loss of good time credits, does not implicate early release, in that situation, more than 6 months ought to not be dismissed on the pleadings alone. Instead, additional factual findings ought, a factual record ought to be developed in some form. That's consistent with this court's opinion in Bryan, that's consistent with Wagner, and that's consistent with Whitford, all of which are extended terms of disciplinary segregation where the court said a preliminary record, a pleadings record, does not allow the kind of factual inquiry Sandin requires. Above 6 months, the court ought to have some additional procedure to determine what are the conditions of confinement. How does the comparison work? What are the facts? That kind of rule of law could be very helpful to the district courts as they deal with this. Mr. Marion's case would certainly be remanded under that sort of an approach.
Because we don't need to make a rule like that to give you relief, do we?
He has 8 months, Your Honor, and his 8 months is long enough. His 8 months, there is enough to suggest that 8 months by yourself could it state a claim? Yes, it could. And because it could state a claim, it ought not to have been dismissed on the pleadings. The length of time, standing alone, is an important fact in this case.
I think I picked this up in the brief, something about disciplinary separation. Is that a term that you used?
I did not use that term. I don't know how that is different from disciplinary segregation, if that's somehow a term of art in the Wisconsin system. I don't know.
Yeah, that was my question, whether there was any difference.
I don't know the answer to that. The question then is, on sending this back, what would happen? Mr. Marion would then put in a complaint, I would hope, that would offer the kinds of details that the court ought to look at to make the kinds of factual decisions that they need to make in order to address the Sandin issue that was before it. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Potts?
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Abigail Potts, and I'm here on behalf of the State of Wisconsin and the defendants' appellees.
Please keep your voice up.
Okay. This morning I would like to make and address 2 points. First is this Court's specific question, and I would like to respond to this Court's specific question, that Marion's 240-day segregation alone was not atypically harsh because of its length alone under Sandin and Wilkinson. I think that the way in which that question was addressed by the appellant kind of misconstrues the meaning of the question the way that I read the question, because length alone in this case should not trigger a liberty interest. The second point I would like to make addresses the district court's handling of this case and how it was proper, it was properly dismissed on the pleadings under Sandin and Wilkinson. And quickly, to respond to a question by this court earlier, Marion's transfer from DS2 to DS1 was addressed in the complaint, as well as the additional comments that he submitted to the district court. Post-Wilkinson, we have two cases.
I understood you that. It did mention that in the complaint?
Yes. It used the term DS2 and DS1 and also the term disciplinary segregation.
And is the distinction pretty much what Mr. Doyle said, go from a double cell to a single cell?
Pretty much it is a STEP program. And although this is not in the record, the code does describe the conditions, and many of them are very similar to administrative segregation.
Isn't DS1 the end of the road? Isn't that the...
DS1 would be where you're initially put, and DS2 would be in where you go after better behavior. Post-Wilkinson, we have two cases, Sandin and Wilkinson, to apply in determining whether a liberty interest has been triggered, or in this case, sufficiently pled to state a claim under the due process clause. The court has asked us to specifically address the following issue. Is Marion's 240-day segregation atypically harsh because of its length alone under Sandin and Wilkinson? The answer is clearly no. In the post-Wilkinson era, we have a general rule. A liberty interest is only triggered when the restraint imposes an atypical and significant hardship on the inmate in relation to the ordinary incidents of prison life. But we also have two benchmarks. We know from Sandin that 30 days of disciplinary segregation, in which conditions inside and outside segregation are not dramatically different, does not constitute an atypical and significant hardship. However, under Wilkinson, we also know that indefinite detainment in supermax conditions is an atypical and significant hardship if it disqualifies an otherwise eligible inmate for parole consideration. What we also know from Wilkinson is that the court noted that none of the factors it considered, and it primarily considered indefinite duration and parole effect on parole eligibility, it also considered supermax conditions to a certain degree. The court said in Wilkinson that none of those factors alone would necessarily trigger a liberty interest. And I think that speaks directly to this court's question, because if indefinite duration alone cannot trigger necessarily a liberty interest, 240 days simply can't. It's also worth noting that the Wilkinson court downplayed the conditions of confinement in relation to the indefinite duration of the confinement and the effect on parole eligibility. So as to duration, post-Wilkinson, duration alone does not trigger a liberty interest unless the duration is indefinite. And then in that case, the court should go on to an inquiry should proceed to effect on parole and conditions of confinement. The fact that the 240-day segregation in Marion's case does not alone trigger a liberty interest is also supported by the pre-Wilkinson cases in this circuit, such as the Whitford case, in which 6 months was not found to constitute an extended term of segregation, and even the Bryan case, which was cited by the appellant. In that case, the court said that duration was not decisive, and a whole year of segregation was found not to alone trigger a liberty interest. Those are...
Mr. Potts, it's your brief. I know you're not identified as the author that uses this term disciplinary separation.
Correct.
Is that different than disciplinary segregation?
It is the term that is given in the manuals. It's not... I don't believe it is... it matters too much in this situation. How it might matter is if this were something other than disciplinary or disciplinary segregation or separation, if it were something else, it might affect parole.
Protection of the inmate or something.
But it doesn't different. In this case.
Okay. Sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. In these pre-Wilkinson cases, we can see that they are consistent with our position that 240 days alone does not itself trigger a liberty interest. So then after Wilkinson, with Wilkinson's focus on indefinite duration, 240 days simply cannot alone trigger a liberty interest. In cases such as Townsend, this court, and in the Gillis case, this court somewhat clarified this issue and recognized the fact that in Wilkinson, there was a shift of focus from Sandin, and the appellant really does focus on the Sandin analysis, but I think we can't analyze this issue without really giving some some attention to the Wilkinson case, which really did shift this focus to indefinite duration and effect on parole eligibility. There are post-Wilkinson cases in this circuit that did remand for fact-finding, but I think it's incredibly important to note that those cases are distinguishable from this case by the fact that from the pleadings alone, there is a reason to believe the conditions were dramatically worse. The cases that we have in mind here are the, I believe it's Lagerstrom and the Westifer cases. We're talking about cases where there was a transfer to the highest security facility in the state in both cases, or I think it was the Gills case where it was a status within the state's most secure prison, an even more rigorous status within that prison. Those cases are easily distinguishable from this case, which turns me to my second point, that the district court's handling this case by dismissing it on the pleadings was proper because from the pleadings, you can tell that there are none of the factors that were present in Wilkinson. And Wilkinson, the court said that none of those factors considered alone would even necessarily trigger a liberty interest. In the case before us, we know from the pleadings that Marion is not entitled to relief as a matter of law. We know that there was a definite duration in his segregation. We can tell from the pleadings he was moved from one segregation unit to another segregation unit in a prison that is not the most secure facility in the state of Wisconsin. We also know that there is no effect on parole eligibility. We have none of the factors, and I think
we don't know anything about the conditions in that prison, though, do we?
We don't. Nothing in the complaint describes anything about conditions.
So as long as you got a guy in something other than your most secure prison, you guys are safe.
I would
That's
say
the
so.
Rule you want,
after
right?
Wilkinson, yes. I mean, Wilkinson says that even supermax conditions alone does not trigger necessarily a liberty interest. None of those factors alone do. This court has said there might be an exception where there is something in the pleadings that suggests a dramatic change, and that might be a transfer from a general population of a prison to WSPF, which is the most secure prison in Wisconsin, or a transfer from within the most secure prison to even a higher level of security. But we don't have those situation in this case. In fact, from the pleadings, you can infer that there really wasn't much of a change at all. He was transferred from one segregation unit to another segregation unit in a prison that is not the most secure facility in the state. I would also like to just mention that from a policy angle, remanding this case and allowing cases like this to proceed for fact-finding would threaten to undermine the screening function of these courts. From these pleadings, we can see that none of the factors are present that were present in Wilkinson. And district courts should be allowed to screen those types of complaints. Unless there's other questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Doyle.
Your Honor, to answer your question more specifically, the first mention of DS-2 and DS-1 is at A-46 and A-47 in our appendix. It's Mr. Marion's motion to reconsider after the court had ruled dismissing his initial complaint. That's the first mention of DS-1 and DS-2. Second, Your Honor, I'd like to talk briefly, if I could, about the state of Wisconsin's reading of the Wilkinson opinion, which I believe is too narrow. Wilkinson does not say that any of those factors alone are not. Wilkinson says, here are the conditions at the Ohio Supermax. In addition, the class of prisoners who had went through the 8-day trial in that case and built the evidentiary record in that case could show this list of conditions. Almost all human contact was prohibited, 24 hours of light in their cells, 1 hour of exercise per day, indefinite duration, and a disqualification from parole eligibility. All of those things together certainly indicated, based on that trial record, that there was a liberty interest.
In other words, if you put somebody in confinement for solitary confinement for 8 months, tell him his sole companions are a couple of snakes and a lot of rats, and he's going to live on bread and water. The fact that he's not in the most secure prison in the state shouldn't make a difference.
That's correct, Your Honor. And Wilkinson does not stand for the proposition that the most secure facility in the state is the baseline for the Sandin
conspiracy. Does any circuit case support the Attorney General's position?
There is no case that says that the baseline ought to be the most secure facility.
Does any circuit case support the proposition that only the most secure facility in the state is eligible to get past the screening process?
No case says that in this circuit, Your Honor.
In any other circuit?
I don't know of any other circuit.
So the Attorney General of Wisconsin is asking us to step out of line, in effect. Am I correct?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Right? To become an outlier.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Toughest circuit in the country, right?
It is not warranted in this case, Your Honor. What we request, Your Honor, is that this case be remanded for development of a further factual record on the conditions of confinement. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, and we're going to take that case under advisement, along with the others, and I wanted to express the gratitude of the court to you, Mr. Doyle, and your firm for accepting appointment in the case and undertaking the representation in the highest tradition of the bar. Thank you.